The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to another episode of the Michelle Tafoya podcast. Please don't forget to subscribe. Just hit that little subscribe button wherever you're listening or watching, whether it's Rumble or YouTube or wherever. Just subscribe so you never miss an episode. The guy we're having on today, Jeremy Ryan Slate. Now, you may have heard of him. He's got a really interesting background. He studied at Seton Hall, studied at Oxford, a lot of religious studies, Catholic studies. And you ask yourself, how did that help him in life? Well, it's helping him right now because he's done a lot of delving into the fall of the Roman Empire and how it compares to what's going on in the United States today. As he says, history doesn't necessarily repeat itself, but it rhymes. So what kind of rhymes is he hearing right now for the United States and the way it reflects ancient societies of Rome? You know, people are people. Humans are humans. We weren't that different millennia ago, just because that was an earlier time. Human nature is human nature. And he sees a lot in it. And he's also got a company called Create Your Brand. He believes podcasts are the way we continue to talk to each other and to hear long form conversations that are really, really valuable. He is our guest next. Again, hit subscribe. Jeremy Ryan Slate. This is going to be fascinating.
Welcome to the Michelle Tafoya podcast.
I continue to be concerned about the First Amendment and free speech, not only in America, but really across the world. You know, at the very heart of our democracy, free speech is the principle that is sacred. I mean, it's the cornerstone that supports every other freedom we cherish. But in this digital age, we've got discussions about wealth, our rights, and our future being silenced or overshadowed in mainstream narratives. And that leaves a lot of you feeling voiceless in conversations that are really crucial to our financial independence and security. And this is where Wealth Protection Research steps in, armed with a mission that's never been more critical. Wealth Protection Research is not a financial advisory firm. They're defenders of free speech, committed to giving a voice to the silenced. Wealth Protection Research tirelessly seeks out financial experts. These are the voices that challenge prevailing narratives, especially as we navigate the uncertainties of the 2024 election. Wealth Protection Research has created a 2024 Election Wealth Protection Report. This free report highlights the three best ideas for protecting and growing your money heading into the 2024 election. It contains ideas the mainstream media isn't going to touch, and listeners can get it completely free. Here's how. Text the word IDEAS to 76626 to get your free copy. If you believe in the sanctity of free speech and the importance of financial freedom, act right now. Text IDEAS, plural, IDEAS, to 76626. Get your free copy of this 2024 Election Protection Report. It's time to widen the scope of what we're told, to hear the ideas the establishment doesn't think you can handle, but you can, and to take control of our financial destinies. Text IDEAS to 76626. 76626 to claim your free copy. Jeremy Ryan Slate is next. So Jeremy Ryan Slate is joining us, and he just drops this one on me that he was named after an actor who was in Bonanza. Do you have any idea who the character was in Bonanza for those people who remember that show?
So I think he was like a B actor, so I don't know like who the actual character was, but he's done a lot of movies.
Jeremy Slate.
He was born like Robert Pulnum or something like that, and he took the name Jeremy Slate as an actor. And you know, he had New York Times links and everything else. I couldn't get found in Google my first couple of years online, and then when he passed in 2017, they stopped paying the hosting on his domain, so I bought it.
There you go, and onward and upward we go. Well, it's interesting timing to have you on the show, because you've done a lot of looking at the fall of the Roman Empire. And today I heard someone compare some of the stuff that's going on with these anti-Israeli marches and protests and people actually going so far as to supporting Hamas and saying, we are all Hamas. this growing hatred of our own country that is kind of one of the hallmarks of what happened in the fall of the Roman Empire. How does that strike you, that sort of that common thread?
I don't know if I necessarily see that. When you look at Rome, like the thing I tend to put a lot of attention on is the late third century. So we're talking at the 200s AD. And in that time period, they were dealing with massive inflation. It was around 15,000%. They were dealing with generals that would basically raise armies and declare themselves emperor. So they had this inflation problem furthered, and they were dealing with a massive immigration problem as well, because they had all these barbarian tribes. And since these generals were fighting and bickering amongst each other, the barbarian tribes were coming in. So to me, I don't really see as much of the unrest in that way. There was definitely a lot of unrest during the Roman Revolution, which was 133 to 31. But that's BC. But I don't really see as much of that as I see inflation and immigration as the major problems.
Well, and those are two major problems. I think when people think about the comparisons with the fall of the Roman Empire, they say, oh, people have been predicting this for decades. But I could say that, well, this country has in many ways been deteriorating over the decades. We've had little spasms of goodness and a lot of spasms of deterioration. But how can you convince people that it's worth looking back that far into history to get that past as prologue sort of viewpoint?
Well, I think when you look at it, I don't like to say history repeats, but it does rhyme. Like a lot of the same things happen, but maybe in slightly different ways. And I think the thing to understand first and foremost, when you look at Rome, there's kind of three eras in Rome. There's the foundation of Rome in 753 BC, where it lasts as a kingdom till 409. There's seven traditional kings. 409 to 31 BC, it's a republic. And then in 31 BC to 476 in the West is the empire. So understanding each one of these periods had kind of their own issues, I think, is important to understand. And then you also look at the Eastern Roman Empire, which lasts until 1453 AD as well. So you have kind of these all different time periods lasting. So when you look at that, I think you have to look at what are the things they tried to do to solve their problems and were they successful? And that's why I often hone in on kind of that late third century AD time period, because in my opinion, and a lot of people might disagree with me on this, I believe America as a republic ceased to be so in 1913. And that's during the Progressive Era when three major things happened. The first being income tax, the second being the Federal Reserve, and another also being the 17th Amendment, which took away the ability of states to actually elect the Senate. So the state legislatures don't have representation anymore. So when you look at that, in my opinion, we've had a lot of the vestiges of a republic. We haven't really been that for a long time. So then when you look at the late third century, you have this guy that comes along, Diocletian, and the thing that he does is he standardizes currency again because the money was out of control. Because to pay militaries, the Roman emperors were taking all sorts of metals and mixing it with the gold and silver to make it go further. And he also standardizes the military, and he takes the empire and also splits it in east and west because it's easier to control because it was this giant thing. So I think if we take a look at some of those things, one of which is already covered by our 10th Amendment, which is states' rights, where states are able to actually handle themselves and just look at the federal government for certain things. We're in a good condition if we handle inflation and we handle immigration, and we need to, Michelle. Like, it's a big problem. Like, that is the thing that kills countries.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-702-5400. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-702-5400. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-702-5400.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Here's where we get into trouble in this country. Anyone who is a proponent of legal immigration as opposed to illegal immigration gets called a bunch of names, so they shut up, right? And they kowtow to this leftist point of view that just let everybody in. You know, everyone has a human right to be here. But we're a country. And and that gets overlooked in this whole thing. And countries have borders and they have standards and they have taxpayers. And we're starting to see the taxpayers more and more in places like Chicago and others, which, where you normally wouldn't see it, saying, wait a minute, what about us? We've been here, we're taxpaying citizens, and now you're opening up buildings in Chicago and taking our tax dollars to support people who haven't been vetted, who are not here legally, who basically, many of them, cross the border illegally, so they're already sort of here on one strike, but you're deemed unempathetic, unsympathetic, ungiving, uncaring, xenophobic, all those names. And that, to me, is where the real division begins. What do you make of that?
Well, I think when you look at it, countries have borders. That's how it works, right? Like, because the thing is like, we have some great programs in this country which help people. My mom's disabled, and without Social Security, like in certain things, like she wouldn't be able to get a lot of the assistance she gets. But when you look at bringing people in and making them citizens or whatever it might be, you're now draining the welfare state too. So you're increasing that inflation problem. You're lowering the value of citizenship. And this is a problem that Rome saw in 212 AD. Under Emperor Caracalla, he declared what's called the Edict of Caracalla, which took all people in the Roman Empire and the provinces and declared them citizens. So overnight, 30 million people became citizens. So that entitled them to the grain dole, which means the government is now feeding them. It entitled them to a lot of programs. And the emperor did it because he wanted to tax their inheritance, because he just wanted their money. But it creates a big problem now, because countries have identities, and that's not a bad thing, right? Like, I just got back from France, and you go to France because you want to experience France, or you go to Italy because you want to experience Italy. And there's nothing wrong with having a country and being proud of your country. But for some reason, it's looked down on. And we can see, right, by this edict, like, it destroys the value of citizenship. Like, people, they don't take pride in that thing if that thing is so easy to get.
They don't take pride in that thing if that thing is so easy to get. So I would contend then American citizenship, yeah, it's been easy to get for a lot of these college kids. They have not been taught how valuable it is. I mean, I point at the college kids because they're the ones who are coming up the ranks, and we have many of them now in corporations and in government, who see the world this way, that we are somehow an evil, that Israel is an evil, that we are not a force for good, that we aren't a country to be proud of. And I can only presume that this has been taught, right? That this is something that has infiltrated and been taught.
Yes.
And I don't understand why there hasn't been enough pushback, or are we starting to see the swell of pushback now?
Well, you're hitting on the right problem, and the problem is education. And if you get a chance to have him on your show, James Lindsay is a very knowledgeable guy about this stuff. But if you look at it, education was actually ruined in this country by a Brazilian named Paulo Freire, that actually took and put Marxist ideologies, one of his followers did it, he didn't do it himself, brought it into the colleges of education. So these colleges have become places that just turn out Marxist ideology. You know, I've been out of college almost 20 years now, but at the when I was in school, I was a Catholic theology major in undergrad. We had to read Marxist ideology as our Catholic social teaching class, which was wild to me. But that's what's happened with a lot of our schools, is they've indoctrinated people into this identity politics. They've indoctrinated people into these ideas of equity rather than being equal. We
right.
should be equal, not right. equitable, because they're very
right.
different.
Very
and
different.
And we've created these ideas, and we've changed how people look at the idea of winning, right? Like, it's the more of a victim you are, the more value you have, which is
yeah.
wild.
Yeah. It's... it's not how what we were built upon. It's these are not the values upon which the United States, which I will always believe is the greatest country in the world, was built. And we are the greatest country in the world because of equality. Now, every time I utter that, I can hear the people say, it wasn't built on equality. It was built on slavery. And we immediately go.
But to, so many countries were like, that's like, we all have that common history. The Roman Empire was built on slavery. Like, people do bad things. It happens.
I think Slav, the root of the word.
It comes from the word Slav. Yes. When Vikings had slaves.
Yeah. So, okay. So, but therein lies this problem that we keep. I think you and I have both spoken with Zuby. Great guy. Rap artist, all around smart dude. Wish he were American so he could run for president. He talks about how this race hustle is real. That instead of celebrating any and all progress that we have made in this country, we just keep going back and blaming it on whiteness, blaming it on masculinity, blaming everything today on generational trauma, whatever it is, the victimhood mentality, rather than inspiring people to reach and grow and have merit and excel and chase the American dream. And that to me is, it's so counterintuitive, but there's a plan behind it, right?
Well, I think when you look at it, like, people miss the value in adversity, right? Like, they miss the value in adversity. I'm a big football fan. So if you look at somebody like Tom Brady, right? Tom Brady had everything going against him, and he somehow becomes, you know, the greatest quarterback in NFL history, you know, arguably, because he had to work through it, right? I talked to Brian Dawkins a number of years ago about, you know, like, how are you such a great Philadelphia Eagle? And he talked about, like, well, I was undersized. I was small. I didn't weigh enough. So you know what? I had to work harder. I had to learn more. And we don't really value that anymore. And I think that is the problem. Our values as a society have changed, that we don't see hard work and integrity as the thing. You know, you talk about, you know, race hustle. Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton wouldn't have careers if that wasn't something you could make money off of. And it's shameful, because if you look at it, we have the most equal society at any time in history, and we're somehow trying to say it's not. Like, we live in a very fair country.
I don't endorse products I would not use or don't use myself. Solaire grills are incredible. Let me tell you about this. If you like to grill like we do at home, this is the last grill you will ever need to buy. And why is that? You just need 3 minutes to heat it up. Even if you're in the Midwest in the wintertime, 3 minutes to get it to 1,000 degrees. And that heat, that high heat, well, it locks in the juices and flavors, and it grills your food faster. Now, this is a veteran-owned, multi-generational family business. So each Solaire grill is made in the USA out of quality commercial-grade stainless steel. It will be the last grill you ever need to buy. And if you want to try it out first, they've got a try before you buy. I did that here at the house. Boy, did it convince me. This little tiny grill showed up. We threw some steaks on it, and we were sold. Visit besthotgrill.com for their free guide, how to choose the right infrared grill for apartment balconies, backyard entertainment areas, anywhere you can have a grill. You want besthotgrill.com. Go there, try before you buy, get a hot, fast Solaire infrared gas grill. You want to grill every single day. I mean, you can do veggies, fish, chicken, burgers, steaks, and you're going to be able to do it so fast, you're going to just get addicted. besthotgrill.com, besthotgrill.com. Let's get back to the fairness of this country and something you said earlier, because I want you, because I try to do it all the time, but I like for my guests also to, let's explain again the very basic difference between equality and equity. The word equity has become such a buzzword, and I think they're just trying to make it part of this lexicon that we run by, that everyone should have equal outcomes. That's not the way it's ever going to work, because life, humanity, is not a fair landscape. There's no, life isn't always fair. Like you said, Tom Brady had everything working against him. It took him hard work and adversity. And we could go through example after example after example of this. But how do you just clearly differentiate between equity and equality?
Equality is very simple. We're all equal. We have an equal shot because, you know, we're Americans and we have that. But when you look at equity, there's a really great meme that explains this. There's these three guys trying to watch a baseball game behind a fence. And one guy's tall and he can see over the fence. So another guy, they give him a box so he can stand on it and be taller than that guy. And they give another guy a box so he could be taller than and stand on that guy. So what we're doing is we're either taking from one and giving to another, or giving somebody basically a leg up because of, you know, their perceived group or whatever it might be, rather than just saying, hey, we're all equal, we have the equal shot, and let's play at this. Equity is basically giving somebody a leg up over somebody else rather than an equal shot.
And it's not a zero-sum game. You know, I know there are only, I'll just use my career for an example. There are only a certain number of NFL sideline reporters on the networks, right? There are three networks who get to carry the NFL, NBC, CBS, Fox. And each one of them had an A game, which meant their top game of the week. For NBC, it was our only one. It was Sunday Night Football. I was extremely fortunate and blessed and worked exceedingly hard to become the sideline reporter of Sunday Night Football. So yes, there were only a handful of those positions available, but everyone was allowed to compete for them. And the amount of work that went into my career even before then, that's what people don't see. I remember this kid asking me once, what, if someone just call you and say, we want you to be the sideline? Are you kidding me? Is that what you think happens in the world? That you just get plucked and are given this good fortune of a job? That's not how it works. But I think maybe that's how people want it to work. What do you think?
I think it's the myth of the overnight success, though, right? Like people, they don't see the success until you have it. I was listening to an interview with John Sterling, who's the voice of the Yankees, that's actually had to retire in the past couple of weeks, and voice of the Yankees for 35 years. And he talked about basically a 15 to 20 year journey that he took to become the voice of the Yankees, where he did a station out in Indiana and this other thing out in Baltimore. And he covered sports part time when he could do this. And he had a talk show here, because the thing that people don't see is all the work you have to do to get there. And I think part of that is also the way society looks at things now. We've looked at the idea of failing and we say, well, it's better that you don't try than fail. And that's terrible, because if you look at it, there is so much value in failing, right? Like, I started six businesses that didn't go well before I started my agency, Command Your Brand, in 2016. And I learned something from each and every one of those things that I use to this day. And I think that's what we don't see, is the value in all the times you lost and learned not how to not lose again. But we've taught kids, like, everybody gets a trophy. You know, we're all in this together and we can all win together. And it's like, right, but somebody's got to win the game, right? That's just how life is.
Yeah. And I sometimes think that sports is the last great bastion of merit, because there's no way around it. You can't just give out a position to someone who really doesn't earn it and can't perform on the field of play.
It's quite obvious when they get there, right? Like, they can't cut the mustard. You know, you can't hide that.
Free speech is the cornerstone. It is the basis. It is the foundation that supports every other freedom we cherish here in the United States. It's at the heart of our democracy. I mean, it is the principle we hold sacred. Don't let anyone tell you different. But in this digital age we're living in, discussions about our wealth, our rights, and our future, those discussions are being silenced or even overshadowed in mainstream narratives. And that leaves a lot of people feeling like they don't have a voice in these conversations that are critical to our financial independence and to our security. And this is where Wealth Protection Research steps in. They are armed with a mission that's never been more critical. Wealth Protection Research isn't a financial advisory firm. They're defenders of free speech. They're committed to giving a voice to the silenced. Wealth Protection Research tirelessly seeks out financial experts. These are the voices that challenge the prevailing narratives, particularly now as we're looking at the uncertainties of the 2024 election. Wealth Protection Research has created a 2024 Election Wealth Protection Report. This is a free report, and it highlights the three best ideas for protecting and growing your money heading into the 2024 election. It contains ideas the mainstream media won't touch. And you can get it completely free. Here's how. Text IDEAS to 76626 to get your free copy. If you believe in the sanctity of free speech, if you believe in the importance of financial freedom, please do this now. Text IDEAS to 76626 to claim your free copy of this 2024 Election Protection Report. It is time to widen the scope of what we're told, to hear ideas the establishment doesn't think you can handle, and take control of our financial destinies. Text IDEAS to 76626. That's IDEAS. Text that word to 76626 to claim your free copy. All right, we have to talk about freedom of speech being under assail, right? I mean, this to me, it's the First Amendment is the first for a reason. And we're seeing free speech be abused in some ways, and free speech or certain kinds of speech being compelled, like you must use my pronouns or else. And, you know, and then also speech being squelched by big tech, by cancel culture. And we're seeing it now, you know, we're seeing it in Brazil. You mentioned Brazil before. We're seeing it in Australia. This is really, really dangerous. It's amazing to me that if you misgender someone, you can be suspended from school. But if you say, we are all Hamas, go to hell, Israel. Hey, come on over here. Let's platform you. What's going on?
I think that there's a few things. I think the first thing is the misgendering thing is crazy to me, because here's the thing you have to consider, right? If I'm going to talk to somebody who's sitting in front of me, do I call them him, her, or she, or they? I don't, right? Like, call them their name, right? That's who I call them. When I'm not with them and I'm talking about them to someone else is when I use the pronoun. So they're trying to control thought when they're not around. That's wild when you consider it that way.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing to take a look at is the one thing that's really exciting to me, Michelle, is never in any time in history have we had the ability to communicate like we can now. Adam Curry is the guy that invented podcasting back in 2004. And he's been famous for saying that podcasting is the last bastion of free speech. Mm-hmm. It's the place where we can still have these long form conversations. Mm-hmm. You know, you can have a 2-hour conversation or 3-hour conversation and really get to something. You cannot handle important issues in a five minute news clip.
Right.
So I think to be able to have this now, I'm actually really hopeful for where we are in history, because those things look crazy. And man, to say some of these things in 1999 and look at it now would be wild. But we've never had an ability to communicate like this before. We've never had an ability to be open like this before. So as long as we still have things like podcasting, we could still do that. And that's why even in the last couple of years, Adam built something called Podcasting 2.0, which is now podcasting built on the blockchain. So nobody owns it. So there is still an ability to have free speech as long as we can, you know, communicate in this long form way.
The question that immediately comes to mind is the attention span of most Americans willing to listen to long form conversations? What's been your experience?
Problem. That's a huge problem. So we've had an au pair for the last couple of years that actually just went back to Hungary last week, and she watches TikTok clips all the time. And she tried to watch a 2-hour movie and she said, oh my gosh, I just can't do it.
Yeah.
So I think it is a problem with the younger generations that definitely get a lot of their information from TikTok. But at the same time, it doesn't mean that we don't need to create this long form content, because we can still get it out there to the right people to make change. And if we can figure out how to make the content in such a way that it becomes a gateway to people to get in, like how do we make it better for TikTok, or how do we make it better for Reels or something like that, it can still get people into the long form, but we have to create things that are a gateway. There's a guy on X that's really great at this. His name's Matt Kim. And Matt is incredible at making these 60-second clips that pull people into his 2-hour conversations. So if we can get really good at that, where we grab people enough that they say, okay, that's really long, but I have to hear that.
Yeah.
I think that's where the value is. We need to become better at those skill sets.
No question. So you brought up TikTok. I am all for banning this thing that is, I don't care what the company says, and I don't care what the CCP says. I do consider it a Trojan horse. I consider it dangerous. I consider their algorithms divisive and, you know, driving a lot of our national self loathing and division right now. So either sell it to an American entity or ban it. Where do you stand?
So I can see both sides of this. And I was originally on the ban it side. But the thing that concerns me is I've read a lot of the bill. I've listened to a lot of what Thomas Massie has had to say. And if they're going to ban it, they need a better bill. Because the problem is there's two parts to it. Anything owned by TikTok or ByteDance, but then also anything that the National Security Act says is an enemy country. So my concern would be they need to close that up if they're going to do it, because that's a big loophole. Now, right now, the National Security Act names North Korea, China, and Russia. But here's the problem. Like, we just watched for the past couple of years them trying to say that a president was an agent of Putin. So if they can do that to someone, that is a really dangerous thing that could, you know, basically take away somebody else's freedom of speech. So I think if they're going to do it, they need a better bill than what's out there now, because this is too open-ended. Just go after TikTok. Don't go after other apps.
Interesting. Why do you suppose they're not doing it that way?
Because my problem would be, like, you could go after things like Telegram. You could go after other apps out there. Like, we need, if you're going to go after TikTok, don't create a bill that has two portions to go after it. Like, people need to read the bill, because it's too open-ended, where it has, there's two different things it can ban. One is ByteDance or TikTok, and the second is things named in the National Security Act. So that, or countries named in the National Security Act. So that is a problem for me.
That is really interesting, particularly given that the Secretary of State just deemed, you know, the IDF, the Israeli Defense Forces.
That's the point I'm making. Yeah. So now if the National Security Act, if that falls under the National Security Act and it becomes, you know, an enemy, you know, group or whatever it might be, well, now anything that comes out of that country could be a problem. So if you're going to do it, then just create a bill that goes after one group.
Yeah.
Don't add in a second group.
Why do you think they aren't doing it that way?
I don't know. I'll be honest with you. I don't know.
Yeah.
At the same time, I don't trust our government. So they always have other means of what they want to do.
Oh, that is such a sad statement, but I'm more and more on board with you. The more that I see, the more that I hear, the more that gets revealed, the less I trust our government. And it makes me so damn sad and frustrated. And yet, you know, listen, I'll tell you something. I'm asked here in my home state to run for governor, to run for mayor of the town I live in, to run for, you know, the House of Representatives, to run for Senate. And I've considered it over the last decade. And part of my reason for leaving sports was to consider it further. But the risk to my family doesn't seem worth it. Like, I literally worry about what would happen to my son and daughter publicly if I ran for office. How do we fix this? Good people want to run for office for the right reasons, and they feel completely at a loss.
Well, I've had this conversation with General Mike Flynn. I've had it with Colonel Douglas McGregor. And I think the problem is we shoot too high. And what I mean is, like, if you look at the president, if you look at the Senate, if you look at Congress, they don't matter as much as we want to make them matter. What matters is your school board. What matters is your mayor. In New Jersey, where I live, we have these people that run our counties. They're called freeholders. That matters because it's close enough to your local life. And I think during the pandemic, especially, we noticed this because we saw who shut things down, who opened things, and who regulated things. It was your mayors. It was your governors. It was your local officials. So to me, if you want to make impact, but you're like, okay, I don't want to, you know, maybe be a mayor or something like that. School boards, they are so important. And I think we see that right now by what books are being in our schools, what people are competing in our sports that maybe shouldn't be. So I think if there is always a way to make impact, and local actually has a much bigger impact than the national scale, because the president doesn't have as much power as we like to think he does. It is what happens in your local area that makes a huge amount of change. So I think there's more power in local, and that it's come up again and again and again in the conversations I've had.
You hear it all the time. All politics are local. And, you know, I agree with you. And some action in activity in my neighborhoods has proven that. And people are waking up to the idea that, wait a minute, they want to do what with that particular street? And they want to build what where? And starting to say, this is not the neighborhood I signed up for, and starting to act. So I agree with that. And I would encourage people to just take a little bit of effort, to take some time to get involved. Last thing I'll ask you, because I love to ask this to all my guests. What gives you hope?
My two daughters. I have a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old. And they're just so darn smart. And they're just so darn hopeful that, like, being a dad is one of the best things that has ever happened. We're actually expecting our third in June.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And to me, that makes me hopeful, but also the ability to communicate makes me hopeful. Like, we have such an opportunity right now that people have not had in other despotic times in history. So we need to seize it, and we need to communicate, and we need to talk about the things that need to be talked about, and take care of your kids. You know, like, we're homeschooling. We're, you know, I live on 5 acres here. They help with our chickens. They help with our farm animals. Like, give your kids responsibility. They want to be involved. They want to do, they want to help. So I think if we can do that, that's the thing that makes me hopeful.
Well, I always tell our audience at the end of every broadcast to be brave and do good. And, you know, I guess the next thing would be to add is to find hope and glom onto it and nurture it and cultivate it as you are with your children. All the best to you. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. And we've been showing people and in the show notes and everything else where they can find you. It's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me, Michelle.
Star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.